Blog Talk Radio.
Because let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your website, go to our blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TailorMade talkradio.blogspot.com. Today we have a magnificent show in store for you. So I would like to say hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. Jima and I are excited to be with you once again. So today's topic includes the Martin Luther King Jr. dedication. We're going to talk a little bit about the speeches that took place today. We also want to talk about what the Occupy Wall Street movement is all about. We want to kind of move in a direction, and it's a good time to be talking about that because of the events that took place today. And I would love to get your comments. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323 580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. I'm also going to open up a chat room to kind of get some of our listeners out there that may not be near a phone that want to chime in on the conversation, because we have a lot to talk about today. And just go to blogtalkradio.com/current events, and you will see the chat room out there going. And, man, I tell you, there's a lot of activity that goes on in the chat room. So just feel free to go out there. Again, that's blogtalkradio.com/current events. And you'll see me out there as the host, CEWPC. So today, there was a celebration, Martin Luther King Jr.'s dedication of his memorial, his magnificent memorial, to say the least. And I want to talk a little bit about one of the interesting speeches made by Martin Luther King's daughter, Reverend Bernice King. Now, she said, Sonny, that despite years of planning, fundraising, an earthquake and a hurricane, perhaps it was no accident that the memorial to the slain civil rights leader was not dedicated on the anniversary of his I Have a Dream speech as originally planned. It may have been God's way, she said, of wanting the world to look at other things that he fought for, such as the eradication of poverty. Perhaps the postponement was a divine interruption to remind us of the King who moved us beyond the dream of racial justice to the action and work of economic justice. She said, perhaps God wanted to remind us that 43 years ago, when our father was taken away from us, he was in the midst of starting a poor people's campaign, where he was galvanizing people from all walks of life to converge on this nation's capital and stay here and occupy this place until there was a change in the economic system and a better distribution of wealth. Perhaps God wanted us to move beyond the dream into action. On the other side of the break, we will listen to the speeches she made. It was one of the most powerful speeches I've heard in a long time. So I want you to stay tuned as I play the speech, and we're going to have a nice little conversation about what she said in the speech. I think you are really going to be inspired. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be right back.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Shima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my equal.
I'm tired of church. need a new website, haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, joining me today to talk about this week's current events is the executive producer of Current Events and the syndicated columnist of the Ask Jima blog, but she's also the author and main contributor of the TaylorMade radio blog, and that's at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. I would like to welcome Jima to the show. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, I want to play for our listening audience the events that took place today. In particular, Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter speech. Now, this is a pretty involved speech, so I want to take a moment to play the speech, and then I'm going to get you to respond. I'd like to get you to respond on several things about the speech. All right, so take a listen.
The presence of our aunt, Mrs. Christine King Farris. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us today as we dedicate this monument to a man of inspiring vision and transformative action, my father, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's been a long time coming. The vision of my father's fraternity, Alpha Phi Alpha, to build a monument, the establishment of a King Memorial Foundation led by Mr. Harry Johnson and 11 staff persons, an act of Congress, 10 years of fundraising and a lot of hard work, an earthquake and a hurricane, but today we are here. And thank God we are here. It is a great time of celebration, and the entire King family is proud to witness this day. I am especially proud to stand here as one of the four children to whom my father referred to as he resounded the American dream that one day we would live in a nation where we would not be judged by the color of our skin, but by the content of our character. Today represents another milestone in the life of America. This is a day that all Americans can be proud of. And may I remind you that this is not just a celebration for African Americans, but for Americans and citizens around this world. And no doubt, today the world celebrates with us. Today, our nation acknowledges its growth again, for this memorial represents a stair step beyond its laws of segregation. It symbolizes that a black preacher, prophet from the South, effected a social change that helped to redeem the soul of America. And I want to express my gratitude to each person, each organization, each corporation, each entity that contributed to what we see here today from its conception to its realization. However, we would be remiss if we did not also recognize and honor the life and legacy of my mother, Mrs. Coretta Scott King. For left after the assassination of my father to raise us four children, my mother also, with her dedicated and tireless efforts, raised a nation in our father's teachings and values. It was vitally important for her that his life, words, and principles become institutionalized. And so she spearheaded the effort, even as a grieving widow, to establish the King Center in Atlanta as the official living memorial to Martin Luther King Jr., and then went on to champion a national holiday commemorating our father's birthday and a host of other efforts. So in many respects, she paved the way and made it possible for a man who was the most hated man in America in 1968 to now be one of the most revered and loved men in the world, so that we might be able to build a monument in his honor. Thank you, Mama, for your dedication. Thank you, Mama, for your sacrifice. And we, as your children, are glad that we were able to share our parents with the world so that we could be in a better place.
Wow. What do you think about that? I mean, she really, and that was just the opening part of her speech, and we're going to get into a little bit more of what she had to say, but the opening was powerful. What do you say to that?
I totally agree, and I think Bernice really captured the essence starting off of what this day was going to be about and what that dedication service was all about. And I think her mentioning her mother, which, you know, the women of that time whose husbands were assassinated with Betty Shabazz and Merle Evers Williams now, I think we forget that they lost husbands and the children lost fathers. And so, you know, we hold the man in such high esteem, but he was still a family man as well and sacrificed so much for the world, basically, that, you know, as she stated, was the most hated man in 1968. So, and yet here we sit at the foot, you know, on the river where Reverend Sharpton says that, you know, there's a new neighbor in town. So I just think she started it off, and the fact that she paid tribute to her mother, I think, was awesome. Because had not Coretta kept the vision, not the dream, but the vision alive, we wouldn't know anything about Dr. King at this point. We would only know little bits and pieces of him. But she kept his vision alive, and for that, she should be applauded.
You know, one thing I also want to add is that when we look at the legacy, the legend, or the life of Martin Luther King Jr., we always talk about all the things that he did and all the things that he brought. I mean, as far as his vision, as you mentioned, his dedication, his support for everything that we were doing in that time, was often overlooked is the same sacrifices that the children and her mom made. And so I thought that was a really good opportunity for her to put that in perspective for everyone and say, look, we know he did all these things, but I want you to also understand the sacrifices that we made because we shared our parents with the world. And earlier we were talking, and I want to kind of mention this now, about when you lose a parent, there's a big gaping hole that's left in that particular family structure. And so you can imagine when they were, you know, really, really young to lose their father, how that shaped their life and their view of America. Especially because he was such a man that was stood for in fact, he stood for what all the things that we're able to enjoy today. So I know it can be frustrating for them to see, first of all, to be able to lose their father, to lose someone of that magnitude, and then when they look at our society today and they see that we've only made baby steps in that direction. We've made progress, but they've been very much like baby steps.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think sometimes we forget the human side of what the children have to endure once a parent has been, you know, taken away from them, and how their lives are no longer the same as our lives are no longer the same. Whether our parent is well known to the world or just to our family, everybody is impacted and everybody responds to it differently. So, you know, I think it's important to remember that when we're trying to figure out, well, what's wrong with the King children, or what's wrong with the with Malcolm X's, you know, daughters. You know, we try to find fault in decisions that they make. But you take, you know, your life being in turmoil every day. You know, when they bombed the house, those kids were there. You know, and we forget that you know, it wasn't all outside of them that their father was attacked. They attacked their home. And so, you know, imagine what you carry with you, having been in that type of situation. So I think, you know, once again that Bernice, she did an outstanding job. She started off extremely well, and it just got better, for, you know, over the course of the day.
Absolutely. I definitely agree. In a lot of cases, I tell people, well, at least the people that know me know that when I was 7 years old, ages of similar to when they were 7 years old, my mom got shot with a 30-06 deer hunting rifle in the back, and she was paralyzed for an extended period of time. And so, you know, in Alabama, in a racially, tense part of our nation, a white man shot my mom in the back. And he did not get but 6 months in jail for shooting into an occupied dwelling. So the devastation that put on my life, the disruption that it had on my life, you know, my mom, she lived. She was able to sustain the wounds, and she eventually walked again and is doing well today. But the disruption that had in my life as a seven-year-old and my sister five, you know, how it shaped my views and shaped how I see society today, up until, you know, until my late 30s, when I was really starting to address that issue, that I understand what they go through. So when I hear people talk about the King family and the things and the dysfunction that they try to put around them, I just want to keep people reminded of the horrific event that took place in their life when they were young people, and the effect that bombing someone's house, or shooting in somebody's occupied dwelling, or, for the lack of a better term, talking so poorly and hating their father, and all on national TV telling lies on these people there's evidence that they just made up, you know, the FBI and everybody else, you know. So it had a profound impact on their life, and I'm so glad to see them doing so well now, and this monument that's erected, and for them to be there and for them to speak out on just that little part, I thought was really profound and moving. So I'm going to move to another part of the speech that I want to get into, and I want you all to take a listen at this part.
Institutionalize his words, his principles, so that we could only remember him, but also so we could be propelled into action, utilizing his philosophy and strategies of nonviolence. It's no accident that the official dedication could not occur on August 28th, the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech, although fully powerful, prophetic, and passionate, and one of the most well-known speeches around this world. Could it be, perhaps, that the dedication not taking place on the anniversary of that great speech is indicative of God wanting us to move forward to look at the rest of King? That as we survey the current events and global cries for an alleviation of poverty and economic oppression, we are being pulled from the familiar place and the comfort place of I Have a Dream to focus in on another aspect of Dr. King's life. Perhaps the postponement was a divine interruption to remind us of the King that moved us beyond the dream of racial justice to the action and work of economic justice. Perhaps God wanted to remind us that 43 years ago, when our father was taken from us, that he was in the midst of starting a poor people's campaign, where he was galvanizing poor people from all walks of life to converge on this nation's capital and stay here and occupy this place until there was change in the economic system and a better distribution of wealth. Perhaps God wanted us to move beyond the dream into action, and maybe we were unable to dedicate this monument on August 28th just because of that. And he's saying to us, it's time to readjust. In fact, over 43 years ago, he told us that we must become maladjusted to certain social ills. We should never adjust to the 1% controlling more than 40% of the wealth. We should never adjust to an unprecedented number of people being unemployed. We should never adjust to any person being without health care because they cannot afford it. We should never adjust to an increase of people moving into poverty. We should never adjust to violence of any form, bullying or being bullied. We should never adjust to policies and practices that profile people because of their color, their ethnicity, or their nation of origin. We should never adjust to a judicial system that allows us to take a life when guilt is yet in question. And so, as we dedicate this monument, I can hear my father saying that oppressed people cannot remain oppressed forever. The yearning for freedom eventually manifests itself. As we dedicate this monument, I hear my father saying what we are seeing now all across the streets of America and the world is a freedom explosion.
Wow. Again, you know, and I'm playing just, you know, small 3-minute snippets here of a powerful undertaking, you know, somewhat similar to what it sounds like the beginning of a revolutionary type speak. And so it's interesting for her to even the entire movement today had that whole stitch of a change is about to happen. What did you get out of that today?
I agree. And I think, you know, people are tired, but they're not just tired for the sake of being tired. They're tired of processes not working. They're tired of the system that so many have died for. Dr. King, Malcolm, Medgar, so many, you know, the four little girls that were bombed in the church, the three boys down in Mississippi, and, you know, just so many people that died for things to get better. And here we sit at a time right now in our country where we are turning back the laws and the processes as it relates to voting, and we're at a time where poverty is at an all-time high. And unemployment is an all-time high. Our education system is failing our children. We are still separate and unequal at this time because of poverty, because there's not enough to go around. We don't get the good books. We get the used books. And so all of those things that so many people had fought for us to have, we're staring at it like, wait a minute. We've already fought this battle. Why are we back here again? And so people are like, I'm not taking this line down. You know, I may have been asleep at the wheel for the last, you know, maybe 5-6 years. I let some things slide that I shouldn't have let slide. But you know what? I can't do this no more. And I think that's where people are. People are frustrated, tired, angry. All of those emotions are playing themselves out in these demonstrations that you're seeing all across the country right now.
You know, I wrote when I was preparing for the show something that was written by Paul in Romans of 8:28. He said that, and we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. And so to me, it was so fitting for the dedication to happen at a time and season that is on the cusp of the revitalization of the Poor People's Campaign, Occupy Wall Street. And what I mean by that was, or what I meant by that when I wrote that was that, you know, when the dedication was supposed to happen, a couple of weeks ago, on August the 28th, on the anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech, you know, the earthquake was happening, the hurricane, Irene, I believe it was taking hold. And so because we wanted that to be the culmination of the event, the I Have a Dream speech, that God intervened and says, no, you know, I have something else I want to do. And so lo and behold, now, you know, several weeks later, you see the people begin to occupy Wall Street. And you're getting the people to say now they want to stand up in the spirit of what I would consider Martin Luther King's Poor People campaign. Is almost like as if the torch is being handed off to this generation to now do something, and it just came to a head for me today to see it evolve as they begin to speak on the dedication ceremony today.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're at a real critical time right now, and if we don't pay close attention, we can lose the message, and we could lose the moment to make something great happen. So we're at a critical time right now, and people have got to recognize that this thing is not about one person. It's not about one group. It's not about one race. It's not about one part of the country. It's a part of who we are in the very fabric of what we call ourselves in terms of America. And America has got to come to grips with her past. In order for her to continue to grow and move, she has got to come to grips with her past. And she has got to make some decisions to do some things differently. And that's what this movement is about. We cannot continue to do things the same old way and think we're going to get some different results. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like some of the things that she said about, you know, we should never adjust to all of these things that are happening in our society today. And she kind of hinted towards, you know, we should not, we are seeing some people now sleep through this particular revolution. And she says that, you know, we need to stand up and face the challenge now. You know, it's time to propel ourselves into action because this is a critical time in our history. If we ever going to do anything about all of the injustices in our society today, the time is now. That's why, again, I go back to the point of you know, we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, because of what happened then was man saying this is how we want to celebrate it. But what happened today, look at how beautiful the weather was. Look at all the things that fit in the place and the timing and, you know, everything working together for this good and for this according to this purpose. So it seems to me that this is the beginning of something monumental in our society today.
Yes, I agree with that. I do. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
I'm going to play the last part of the speech here, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about the ending here.
Rumbling of discontent that we hear today is the thunder of disinherited masses rising from the dungeons of oppression to the bright hills of freedom. I hear my father saying, as we protest, though, we must conduct ourselves on a higher plane of dignity and discipline. I hear my father saying, we must have a radical revolution of values and a reordering of our priorities in this nation. I hear my father saying, as we dedicate this monument, we must rapidly begin the shift from a thing-oriented society to a person-oriented society. I hear my father saying, one of the great liabilities of our history is that all too many people fail to remain awake through great periods of social change. Every society, he said, has its protectors of the status quo and its fraternities of the indifferent who are notorious for sleeping through revolution. But today, spoken could, if we allow them, propel us into action. Action that responds to the discontent of the disinherited, conveying that we stand together in seeking a distributed inheritance for all. Action that reflects our commitment to not allowing a focus on gaining things to deter us from compassionately engaging people. Action that reverberates with a common desire for the manifestation of freedom. Action that resonates with the discontented masses, supporting social change and demonstrating that we are alert during this time of economic revolution. And so I say in closing, let us walk together, children, and not get weary. Let us work together, children, and not get weary. Let us struggle together, children, and not get weary. Let us hold on together, children, and not get weary. Let us fuss, fight, but get over it together, children, and not get weary. But most of all, we must pray together, children, or we will get weary. And one day, we'll all be able to say, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are all free at last. God bless you.
Again, wow. I mean, you know, I've listened to that thing ten times. And then every time I listen to it, I get something else out of it. I mean, it was just amazing how, she was so passionate about it. But, you know, we already mentioned because it was her father. But because of the state of our society today, I think that she gave it a little bit more because of where we are today.
Peril, and if you go back to the time in which Dr. King was assassinated, and you go back to those things that people were fighting for and that people were being killed for, it's the times in which we're living in right now. Those times of the have-nots, not having enough, a time of people being turned away from the polling booth because they didn't know how many bubbles was in a bar of soap, how many jelly beans was in a jar. So you look at the 96-year-old who was denied her voter's ID because she couldn't produce a marriage license. Although she's voted in every election for the last 50 years or more, she couldn't produce a marriage license that matched her name on her ID, so they refused to give her a voter ID. So where are we? You know, are we in 2011? Or are we at a time such as the 1950s and 60s when all these things were going on? You have people being killed simply because of who they are and what they represent. You have children who are not being educated properly. And those were the same things that was going on back then. So she had to call us. Give us a rallying cry, so to speak. And I agree with you. It was very revolutionary in its tone and tenor. Not a revolution in terms of we're going to tear down some stuff, but we will tear down some stuff, and we're going to tear down these strongholds that the system has placed on us, but not in a violent way. We're going to attack you where we know you will hear us the loudest. And that's what Dr. King did. Dr. King attacked the system where he would make the most noise. When they did the Montgomery bus boycott, that didn't end in a week. That was over a year of those people that sacrificed and decided we're not riding our buses no more and we're not sitting in the back. But we're going to still go to work every day. We're going to do the things we have to do. We're just going to go around you. And when they saw that the people were serious, and when they looked at their bottom line a year later and saw how much money they lost, then they realized we're going to have to go ahead and let them sit wherever they want to sit on the bus. But it didn't happen overnight. It didn't happen in a month. The seasons came and went from when they started, from when it ended. So, you know, we've got to be ready for a long-haul battle. We've got to be ready to fight to the end and not give up so quick. We talked about this last week with us being a microwave generation, a microwave society now. We want everything so quickly. But if we learn anything from the teachings of Dr. King and those in that movement, we learn that you have to be patient and you have to be diligent and persistent in what it is you're fighting for.
And that's the critical component of what's happening now, right? Because of a microwave mentality, I want it now, I want it hot, I want it fast, then people tend to get bored easily. People, in this generation of ADD, we tend to get distracted easily. And so if anything is going to change, then there has to be an extended movement, not just a, you know, Occupy Wall Street, you know. This has to be a move in Wall Street type of deal, because if you're going to think about an occupation being temporary, then I'm going to suggest that Wall Street can wait you out, because it could only be so long that you can go without sleeping in your own bed. There's going to be only so long that you can go without using a bathroom. So if you're going to get in this fight, then you have to get in it with the mentality of, this is going to be something extended. I'm going to move my residence. I'm going to dig in my spades, as we say in the military. And that means I'm going to take up residence in this particular situation so that we can, in fact, have change.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I think people are trying to figure out what's going on with with Wall Street, or all these demonstrations are popping up in terms of what are people looking for, what do they want. Right now, people just want to be heard. They want you to know that I'm not okay, I'm not happy with what's going on in the world today. And so that's why you see so many things happening in so many different parts of the country, because people are fed up. Those are some of the same things that happened back during the movement. You know, Dr. King wasn't at every sit-in. He wasn't at every march. He wasn't at every rally. But people, you know, decided in their own way, in their own area, what can I do to impact the system that I am a part of in my hometown? What is it that I can do to make things better? And so that's what you're seeing, all across. You're seeing people, you know, take the time to take a look at it. But I think also what's going to be critical, like you stated, is that there has to be some longevity. You know, I've got to know that the sacrifice that I'm making is not a short-term, it's going to be all over in a little while type of situation.
Absolutely. You know, and so I also wanted to mention there is some advantages to not having a plan in this type of situation, because, you know, let's say that 3 weeks ago when we started talking about this and we started letting the international community know, because this show is aired all over the world, when we start really raising the level of conversation before the mainstream media did, then let's say if they would have had an agenda. And then the powers that be could say, hey, no, if you want this, we give it to you. And then they give it to them, and they was to still have some complaints, and they could say, well, you know, we gave you that, and y'all being, you know, kind of off the cuff, and you know, but because they don't have an agenda right now, then their opposition can't come up with a plan to get them out of the way so quickly. And because we know the plan is going to be a quick fix, as opposed to really fixing the problem, they're going to, you know, fix. They're going to fix the symptoms, as opposed to fixing the problem, right? And so, because of that mentality, I think it's a good thing for them not to have a narrowed down set of demands or requirements right now. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I agree with that, but I think also though the argument then becomes they really don't know what they want. So, you know, we don't have to really meet any demands because they haven't made any. We don't really have to take them serious because they're just here taking up space. They don't even know what they want. So, on the one hand, I understand what you're saying, and that they will use the whatever it is they do want to use it against them. But on the other hand, I would get the argument that there has to be something targeted. When you're saying when you occupy Wall Street, should you not pick a specific company, entity on Wall Street that has caused the most damage, you know, to our American fabric as we know it, and deal with that? Can you go by the IRS building and go out there and protest a little bit, because we know our tax thing is out of control? Can you go to Washington, D.C. and meet Congress on the Hill and demand that they pass that jobs bill. Not just send them a tweet or an email or a phone call, but when we start showing up in their face and meeting them coming off the train and meeting them where they are, they will have to make some changes. So I think, you know, at some point there has to be, and that doesn't mean that the same group that started out in New York has to be the same group that goes to D.C. That's why I said Dr. King wasn't at every rally and every sit-in and every march. So there has to be people that take this thing up and say, you know what, we're going to camp out in front of the Capitol. We're going to go where Congress is. And they have deadlines, and here we are out the middle of October, and they are a month away from needing to have something done as it relates to the job, as it relates to a budget. All these things are coming up, and if not, we're going to be right back in the same place we were this time last year, trying to figure out what to do at the end of the year.
Yeah, but isn't it true that because there's so many different people with so many different issues, it's been so many years that they've been really treated unfairly, that you're right. It's hard to say it's just the IRS. It's hard to say it's just mortgages. It's hard to say it's just health care. It's hard to say it's just jobs. It's hard to say it's just education. It's hard to say it's just crime. So, for them to say, look, we want you to stop what you're doing and pay attention before we come up with these issues that we want you to address. And that's the reason I think it's a good thing, because they're saying, hear me, stop what you're doing. I want your full, undivided attention. And once I get your full undivided attention, then we can talk. Because right now, you haven't been listening.
I agree that this initial stance was to get everybody's attention. And not only was it to get the attention in New York on Wall Street, but our city and state governments all across this country has been very disingenuous with its population and with monies that they've received. They haven't spent it the way they should have, and now, you know, everybody is struggling because of that. So I think, you know, that's why you see so many things popping up around the different cities around the country is because of that. You know, you go handle Wall Street and I'm going to handle my street.
Right.
Somebody
right.
still got to be at home handling the street at home, too.
Right. So I want to shift the conversation now a little bit to Al Sharpton, what he said today. And again, full disclosure, I know that you and Al tweet each other all the time. So, I like to at least address that issue so people won't think that our show is slanted or biased towards Al Sharpton. But, I mean, he's a great commentator. I love his show, love his work. And he's always on point. And so I want to take a break. But after the break, we're going to listen to what Al Sharpton had to say at today's events. And what he says is going to really, really make you think. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be right back.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, Tailor Made Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Seema can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my East Boone friend.
Welcome back to Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And after Al Sharpton, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. But first, I want you to hear what Al Sharpton had to say at today's memorial unveiling. Take a listen.
We are here today to dedicate this memorial. But let us not be confused. This is not a monument of those times past. This is not a memorial to someone who has passed into history and that is dead. This is a marker for the fight for justice today and a projection for the fight for justice in the future, because we will not stop until we get the equal justice Dr. King fought for. Dr. King was not just a historic figure. He was a conduit of a spirit of justice. Justice has been denied in those times. He brought us from the back of the bus. He brought us to voting rights. But we must continue to fight for justice today. Justice is not trying to change the Voting Rights Act and deny us in 34 states our right to vote with voter ID laws. Justice is not executing people on recanted testimonies. Justice is not sending children to schools that are not funded. Justice is not 1% of the country controlling 40% of the wealth. Just like Dr. King talked about occupying Washington, just like there are those occupying Wall Street, we are going to occupy the voting booth, and we're going to take those in that stand up for justice and retire those that stand in the way. We are here to say that we're going to continue marching. In the spirit of Dr. King, we marched through the streets yesterday in Washington. We gave one message. You will not undo the King dream. You will not take away the Voting Rights Act. You will not take away the Civil Rights Act. You will not cut back on Medicaid and Medicare to bargain down those rich trillionaires that ran this country into deficit. And now you want us to balance the budgets on what is our entitled program. You want to mess with the Social Security of our seniors. That's why when we line up to vote, don't make this partisan. When you mess with Social Security, this is not about Obama. This is about our mama. We're going to vote like we never voted before. Close. When we go through those arts, through that to the temple of hope, to the stone of hope, let them come from all over the world to this stone of hope. Where you fight in Europe, where you fight in the Middle East, where you fight in Africa, come here to the King Monument and see the stone of hope. And when you walk through, you'll see a man standing in a posture of faith. Because we not only had hope, but we had faith. Faith that fed us when we were hungry. Faith that clothed us when we were naked. Faith that brought us from the back of the bus to the White House, from the outhouse to the White House. We come this far by faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting in His holy word. He never failed us yet.
So that was, again, another powerful speech. And this took place all day. I mean, there was just, you know, speech after speech after speech that really talked to the time that we're in today. And so listening to Reverend Al speak in just a few moments ago, there was a lot in what he said. He talked about injustice. He talked about what happened with the execution. He talked about Voting Rights Act. I mean, so there was a lot that went on. What do you want to address first, Gina?
I want to address first the, when you talk about justice and how there's so many things as of late that does not seem like we're operating out of a place of being just in our decisions. You know, Troy Davis' case was sad on so many levels, the main one being, unfortunately, until things are changed, it won't stop with Troy Davis, you know. It didn't stop with Troy Davis because there'd be so many more Troy Davises of the world. And so when you talk about, and Bernice King, you know, mentioned it too, about us executing people on recanted testimony.
That's right.
You know, I don't, you know, people probably didn't hear that, but, you know, I heard it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we began to take a look at where we are in this totality, you know, it was something, and I don't know if you're going to play anything from what Reverend Jackson said, but it was something to hear him say that you have those that want to, that will take down the ship to get at the captain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so when you look at the fact that a lot of what is going on is all about the extreme views of trying to discredit and dismantle this presidency, and then, you know, nothing is being done to help the poor, to help the disenfranchised. And so Reverend Al is always on point because he talks about where we are in the moment, not, you know, not last week or, you know, not 20 years ago. He talks about where we are right now and that fervor and frustration you feel coming through.
Absolutely. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. You know, again, I talked about Reverend Al having so much in that little four or five minute speech there. And, you know, he talked about justice and he gave some specific examples. Well, he actually gave some general examples, and we can also equate those to some specific examples. You saying Troy Davis. The other thing he talked about is the Voting Rights Act, and you mentioned earlier about this elderly lady that was trying to vote, and they was wanted her to show her ID because she didn't have a marriage license. And so all of these things are under the auspices, are under the umbrella of being unjust, or unjust. So, again, I think everything that Dr. Martin Luther King stood for, what he was fighting for, what he gave his life for, is still prevalent today. And that's why it's so important that we don't just get lost in the fact that that was years ago, because it's truly happening today. And just like you said, Reverend Al always seemed to bring up those relevant events so people can't always go back to then that was happening now. No, it's happening today.
Right, and that's what I think today's messages were about, is that although we're honoring a man who died 43 years ago, and whose legacy will outlive us all, the issues that we're facing are very right now. His legacy is very right now. The things he fought for are very right now. And we've got to take a hold and recognize where we are. And the sad part about it is that it takes some of us too long to realize that what happened to my neighbor could happen to me, because we don't see it as a sense of urgency. But I challenge you, and I challenge the listeners out there, we are in a state of emergency right now. And if we don't wake up and really take a look at what is happening and what we have allowed to happen, because I fought those who did not go out to the polls last November and vote. I fought those who switched parties last November and decided that they really wasn't real happy with where they thought the country was going. Well, if you wasn't happy then, I know you're not happy now. There's no way you could be happy with how things have turned on a dime. And so I challenge us to take a look at, you know, what was really happening not just 2 years ago, but what was really happening 6 years ago. You know, what was really happening at the end of President Bush's terms.
what was going on in the world and see who is really fighting for the people and not for profit and not for organizations or corporations, but who is really fighting for the people and what is it that they say that makes you realize I might not be in the soup line today, but if they have their way, I might be there. And unfortunately, it might not be no soup in the soup line.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's so many people that may need that the soup line might not even be able to meet the needs of the demands that's going to be there. So we have got to take a real hard look at our own situations. And what did we do? How did we contribute to some of the situations we're seeing today?
You know, I would also like to add to that that the people that are not engaged into what's happening are normally making their decisions on things that are tangible. For example, if they have a job, they think their job, there's some job security in that job, when the reality is that a lot of jobs are being shipped overseas. And so with those jobs leaving the country, they're not coming back. People can say what they want to, but because of technology and because of low wages or low labor overseas, they're not going to make those jobs come back. So the false sense of security around a job is not really there. And then the other thing is about the house, or they having a mortgage. But the fact of the matter is that that structure can change through our laws. How they're tearing down houses today because they can't resell them because they have too much, it's a supply and demand problem. They have too much supply and not enough demand, so they're tearing down houses. You know, and so what people are not looking at are the intangibles, the voting structure, the gas prices seeping up, the food prices seeping up, the 1% receiving 40% of the world. Those intangible things that they say they're not engaged in, then that's why people they're asleep at the wheel, basically.
Right. I agree with that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I want to also play for you what Reverend Jesse Jackson had to say. And let's talk about what he talked about. Okay. Here's Jesse Jackson.
After Dr. King planned an occupation on this same spot, he would say to the occupiers in Wall Street, "The movement has gone global. You are the children and offspring of Dr. King's Poor People's Campaign and Resurrection City, the occupied Wall Street in 2008 and 2011, and now 43 years after 2008. In that legacy, keep protesting, remain nonviolent. Stay disciplined, stay focused, don't just fortify the system, restructure it, march on for an even playing field, public rules, clear goals, fair referees, and transparency. March on to fight racial injustice and economic inequality, and fight for economic and racial justice. We're all God's children with a royal bloodline. We all matter. So the king would say, you must use the rights earned through the sacrifice and blood of the martyrs. You must use your minds and bodies as living sacrifices. You must use your vote, our path to legislation, litigation, and laws to protect the vulnerable. Use your love building coalitions. Remain focused on being the rope of hope for those in the hull of the ship, the 99%.
So one of the things that I saw consistent amongst the theme today was people equating Dr. King's events over the years equate to what's happening now. So they're drawing a direct correlation between the two. And the other thing that I saw that continued to run through the theme of everybody's speech and their language, the fact that they're saying, fight. Get up and do something. And they're encouraging people to get involved. What do you think?
Well, that's interesting that there is a moment of encouragement, because if you remember a couple of weeks ago, when the president at the Congressional Black Caucus dinner said we still had work to do and to let's take off our slippers and put on our marching boots, that he got a lot of backlash from that. But how funny the tide changes in a couple of weeks when people realize we really do have to go out and do something, and that, you know, nothing is just going to just be handed to us and say, oh, here you go. The laws are not just going to be changed because somebody's going to wake up one morning and feel like being nice to a whole group of disenfranchised people. So, you know, there is work that we have to do and that we must do. And if we don't work, then we really can't talk about nothing. If we don't go out and register people to vote, or even as we do on a weekly basis, inform people of, you know, what's happening, and then let them decide what lane they want to be in. If we, you know, if we don't do that, then we might as well not complain about anything. So for all the people out there in the world today that saying, oh, I'm not even gonna go vote this next election because it's not gonna do anything. Well, when things don't go the way you want them to go, you have no right to complain because you did not participate in the process. And so we do. Participation is an action. You go do something, you know. And so there's one way to be a part of something. I can just join it and be a member and have my name on the roll. But it's another thing to be a partner in the movement, because a partner is going to do everything they can do to make it work. And so that's what we've got to have. We've got to have some people that are willing to be on the ground, but you also got to have people that's in the boardroom that's helping making the decision, because we need everybody everywhere.
You know, that's interesting that you said that, because as I was watching the events today, Roland Martin, the host of Washington Watch and a real good journalist in my opinion, talked about the things about staying in your lane. He mentioned years ago when you had movie stars, you know, they did a thing and they some protested, some didn't, but they did what they could to support. Then you had, of course, you had Dr. King and his group. And then you had Malcolm X and their group. And so you had a lot of people doing a lot of activity, but you know, you never found people crossing over into the lane. So, you know, for people to say that it doesn't involve me, or I don't have anything to offer, I would encourage them to say you do, by saying you do have something to offer. You can get involved. You may not be a great orator, but you may be able to stuff the most envelopes. I mean, every little bit helps, right? So getting out there, getting active, being active, getting engaged, being involved, voting, all of those things matter. And I tell you again, if we don't, this is the moment. We cannot lose this moment. If we want things to be better for our society, we have to seize this moment. You know, you back in the day, you had slavery, right? And you had people galvanizing around that particular issue. Then you move forward. Then you had people galvanizing around the civil rights movement. And so now, in the 21st century, this is our generation's moment. Zima, what are we going to do with it?
Well, hopefully we will move on the moment, and we will move to a point where we realize that it's not just about me today, but it's about me and my family and my children and the community at large for tomorrow. So that's what we have to remember, is that it's not just about today. And so we have to move in this movement and in this moment, move in the movement. And move in this moment. That's what we have to do.
All right. So in our last segment, I want to talk a little bit about the music in the moments. You know, back in the day, you know, of course, in the civil rights movement, you know, music played a tremendous part of what happened. Right. I mean, every time that people got excited, they got up around a song. I'm going to play a couple of songs, and I want you to think about this for a second. So those type of songs back in the day, they got people excited and they got people ready. And so anytime that you hear those songs, you know, you would get ready. And so I would just challenge our society to come up with our Get Ready song. And coming up after the break, we're going to talk about a few more songs that got people energized. And they were singing a few of those at the memorial today. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Social media strategy. Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room open, and you can also tweet me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. Now, I was talking before the break about music and how the music was always fitting for the movement. And People Get Ready by Curtis Mayfield, Ain't Gonna Let Nobody Turn Me Around, The Freedom Singers, We Shall Overcome, you know, A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. All of those songs were powerful, energizing songs, songs that make people want to get up and move. But today, I'm not real sure if we have a similar type of song that correspond to the movement that's happening today. Jima, what do you think about that?
Oh, no, we don't have anything right now that in my opinion, that is a song that when you hear it, you're ready to take action or you're ready to move or it takes you to a place where you know there's something that needs to be done or something that has to change. I don't have a song that comes right to my mind right now that's an up-to-date current song that gives us that. I think the closest that came to it was during the President Obama's campaign when Will.i.am then put together the Yes We Can moment and the song that came along out of that. But other than that, there hasn't been anything that I can recall, especially right now during this time, that's a song that speaks to a message, that speaks to a movement that they had back in the day.
Right. Now, this song here, I tell you, you know, it still resonates today with so many people. And do you think we'll ever get back here?
Well, and it's interesting because you don't really even have to play the whole song.
Right.
You play the beginning, and everybody know immediately what that song is. And so when you're wondering about a change, and you go back to the movie, Malcolm X movie, and that's the song that was played toward the end, you know, and so it brings up so many things. I would love to get to that point, but I don't know. I don't know if we have the right mindset to take us there.
Well, you know, when it comes to the artists back in the day, this classic, do they exist today? I mean, even if we talk about this modern form, is there someone out there that exists that could give us that, to give us that lift? I mean, because I think these songs got people together and says, look, we all understand and can feel this. We can move together. Is there someone out there today that could do that for us?
Well, yeah, there is. The problem is that those people back then, they were part of the movement, if only from a peripheral standpoint. But you knew where they stood, you know?
Right.
And so you knew that, I mean, if you look at the world of entertainers back then that we hold in such high regard, they did what they could in their part of the movement. And so do we have an entertainer or a musician that can capture where we are right now? I think we do. I mean, a couple come to mind right off the top, and that's Stevie Wonder, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I think Will I Am could do it again. I really do. So it's just,
you know,
hopefully just a matter of time before it comes out.
But you know what was interesting is that today, and then we mentioned this earlier about entertainers getting involved and how, you know, they really took the forefront. Let's look at Harry Belafonte, for example. He used to march right along with everybody, and he contributed in vast amount of ways. But it seems today that there are certain people that maybe have that talent or shy away from this activity or don't really get involved because they're afraid that it might damage their sales, right? They're in this business to make money.
Well, I think everybody was in the business to make money. I don't think there's any entertainer, even back then, who didn't want to make a healthy living, who didn't want to have a better life for themselves and their children than the life that they had. So no one, you know, travels all around the world and back then play on the Chittenden circuit and be discriminated against and can't drive through certain parts of the world just because they have nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were already sacrificing anyway and was already trying to create something even back then. So I think the problem, though, and I alluded to this earlier, is that we don't see the situation as being critical because we really don't believe it could happen to us. That's for those people. That's for somebody else. That's for somebody who spent too much money or who borrowed, who couldn't afford what they had. That's not me. So we don't understand the housing crisis because we think everybody got a subprime mortgage, when in reality that's not true. And so because we have made it be outside of ourselves, then we don't see the sense of urgency to be a part of it because I'm not going to make those type of decisions, not realizing that it's the decisions of others that have had a greater impact on what's happening, you know, in the lives of everyday people.
Hmm. Well, will we you think we're going to ever have a We Shall Overcome moment?
I don't know if we'll ever have a We Shall Overcome moment. I don't know. I really don't know. I really hope that where we are now would give us some push, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. We're so disjointed with all the ways to communicate and stay in touch with each other. We're still so far away from each other.
You know, I when I look at where we are right now, and the fact that and I said this in my writing, is but we're on the cusp, right? We're at the tipping point. You know, when Malcolm Gladwell talks about the tipping point, we're almost there. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take for us to really get over the edge so we can really be able to affect change. And it's going to be interesting to see over the next couple of weeks because there's a lot of momentum right now, right? You're seeing the movements, and they had the National Day on October the 15th where it was recognized globally about what we were doing here. And so now on the heel of that was the Dr. Martin Luther King, and you had all of these people come out and talk about it, encouraging people to go out there. When we get into next week, and, you know, the Rangers get to playing again, a World Series start, the basketball season, whether it's going to be playing or not, takes hold, and the fact that, you know, people are getting ready for Halloween and Thanksgiving, will we keep this momentum? What's going to happen over the next several weeks will change how people view this movement? What do you think?
Well, if nothing changes systematically, then people will have to stay focused on it because people will continue to lose their jobs, people will continue to lose their homes, people will continue the unemployment will continue to rise. Just like you stated, you're talking about the NBA possibly not having a season. Well, that's a whole lot of people that's going to be added to the unemployment roll. And so, you know, it will stay focused because there's going to be continued problems and continued situations where people are not in control. People are going to continue to be, and what normally happens is that there's a moment of desperateness, and people begin to do things out of desperation. And so we have to be aware of that, because when people are desperate, they become violent.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't want it to turn into a violent movement. But when you look at how so many of our leaders in our community died, they died violently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so sad, you know, that in death, the thing they was trying to avoid most is how they, you know, they got rid of them.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. So this last segment I want to talk about today is what I'm going to call the alternative, right? We have an existing president, and he's put in a record number of legislation over the last 3 years, anywhere from helping out what we're doing with health care, jobs. He's put some money out there for the black. He's out there for the black farmers. He's been fighting out there for them. He got women equal rightful equals pay. I mean, he's done a lot. There's a litany of things that he's really accomplished over the last few years. And so, my question is, what is the alternative? If they're saying that the President Obama is so bad, what is the alternative? And when I ask that question, I'm talking about the people that are in the GOP a presidential campaign right now. And in fact, you know, none of them were present at today's events. What does that speak to when we're talking about an alternative here? Are they really for everybody?
Well, no, they've made it clear that they're not for everybody because of some of the things that they talk about on their platform. So, there's no secret that that's just not all on the GOP. I mean, there are some Democrats that have made it real clear as well what side of the coin that they're going to be on. So I'm not surprised that they're not there. I probably would have been more surprised if one of them had showed up, you know, because what would they possibly say that would be believable based on everything else that they've said? So, you know, we wonder what the alternative is. And the alternative is you can look and see what's happening across this country and what happened in every state that elected a Republican governor or a new Republican governor. What's happening in those states? That's what you have to look forward to on a national level. You have to look forward to services being cut. I hear now there's some state, I don't know if it was California or Arizona or somebody, they're talking about using their prisoners as firefighters. So they don't have to worry about, you know, fire department. And then there's another place, Alabama, with this new immigration law, they're saying, well, we don't really need the migrant worker or, you know, those low-end people to do these jobs in terms of our crops. We'll just use our prisoners. Really? That's the nation we've become, is that we're gonna use our prisoners to offset our budget? Really? And so, to me, you know, we don't really have to imagine what it would be like. We can just go to Ohio, or we can go down to Florida, or we can, you know, go to Arizona, or we can go, I mean, there's so many places we can go. Texas, you know, for all this glory, you know, Rick Perry has done the state some damage and has not been quite truthful about, you know, how things are going here in Texas. But still, we can go to Kansas, we can go to Oklahoma, we can go to a variety of states to see what's happening, how many services have been cut, how many people have been laid off in state government and local governments and things of that nature, and what impact that's had on the system, you know. So we don't have to really imagine it. We can just go somewhere right now and take a look.
So what do you think about Herman Cain's 999 plan, the fact that, you know, that is an alternative to what we're doing now, our tax structure, and it makes sense, right? I mean, come on now. I mean, a lot of people want to try to shoot holes in this plan, but the fact of the matter is, if you're paying 35%, 15 to 17% income tax tax on your income, and it's been dropped down to 9%, that's a 6% difference, right? If you're paying 35% on this or 25% of that, and it breaks down to 9%, and then everybody's paying into the tax system. Isn't that better for everybody, Jima?
No, and I stated a week or so ago, I haven't completely done my homework on 999 because I don't really think I need to because it's not going to work anyway. So I'm not even going to really try to understand. But what I do know, for those states that do not have a state sales tax, currently, now you're asking them to pay a state sales tax, something that I had to pay before. So it's not going to work because there's too many areas that would benefit to that individual because I'm going from zero. You talked about going from 15 to 9. Well, what about going from zero to 9?
Well, here's
forcing me to pay a sales tax when I've never had to pay one before.
Well, here's the
and
magic,
I'm not
though.
Making any more money.
But here's the magic. The fact that everybody is paying into the tax structure as opposed to just 40% of people paying into tax, doesn't that lift everybody up? And here's what I'm saying. If you're asking the middle class to pay, 80 to 90% of the tax, because the rich, they always find loopholes, right? So they really virtually are paying nothing in taxes. And the fact that the poor in this nation, and poor can be defined in many ways, they're paying virtually zero taxes. So the bulk of the taxes are being paid by, middle America, right? A middle income America. So they pay pretty much everything. They're always getting hit for fees. They're always getting hit up for this, for that. And then it's the rich get free stuff all the time. So if you change to a tax structure that everybody pays into, then it lessens the burden on the people that are paying the most.
As I stated at the onset, I have not done my research enough to give you a counter argument to that statement because it's not as simple as you are making it out to be. But that's how Herman Cain presents it as well. So, but because I haven't done my research, I'm not going to try to dispel what you stated. I don't have my facts. But when I do, you can best believe I will have a counter to that argument.
Okay, and then the other thing about Herman Cain is the fact that a lot of people in the media are really being dismissive towards him. And what I mean by that is when Rick Perry when he came on to be a one hit wonder, and I like Rick Perry. I mean, the fact I think he won every debate up until this point. The fact that, he was a one-hit wonder and then fell down in the polls, he got his due diligence, right? Same thing with Michelle Bachmann. And Michelle Bachmann is not any more crazy than Herman Cain. They both talk like lunatics, right? I think they're very smart people, but they talk like they're lost their mind, right? And because of that, they get a lot of – well, at least Michelle Bachmann got a lot of attention. Donald Trump got a lot of attention early on, and we know he had no chance in – hot water to be a president. But yet, when Herman Cain he's really starting to get votes. I mean, it's not like this is a figment of people's imagination. He's getting votes. He won several polls, and he's leading now amongst all the Republicans, even the ones that have ran before. So why is it then that the media is really, turning their head towards him? They're not giving him any kind of real press.
Because they know the Republican Party probably better than we do. And they know that it would be a cold day before the Republican Party would nominate in its totality Herman Cain to be its representative. They know that. But even saying that, I think now that's why all of a sudden Herman Cain is getting a lot of press and is getting a lot of attention about the 999 plan because people are like, okay, so you're the front runner. You're who the people, quote unquote, are voting for in their straw polls. Let's do some investigation into this. Is this really as good as you say it is? And so now, with being a front runner comes more scrutiny. So, he's going to have to be ready to answer the questions. He can't be asked the question and his answer is, I don't know. but you want to be the president of the United States. I don't think President Obama has ever said, I don't know. Even when he was running, I don't think he said, I don't know. So how is it that you think it's okay to be asked a question about your plan and how taxes would work under your plan, and you say, I don't have an answer to that?
But
really?
But that's
I'm supposed to take you as a serious candidate, and you can't answer a simple question about your plan. No.
That's a part of his appeal, too. I mean, come on now. So the alternative, of course, is to do like what Michelle Bachmann does, right? She always come up, she make up stuff. And then people go fact check her and say, and no, she's way off the mark. But she's given an answer, even though it's the wrong answer. Isn't it better if someone tells you the truth? If they don't know, they have to go do the research. And in fact, most people of leadership don't know have all the answers. That's really truthful. And the fact that the media is being more dismissive towards him, not to say that he's not, there not may not be some holes in the 999 plan, but there are holes in the current tax structure. So the holes are so huge that the corporate people are getting way over. So just because there are holes in his plan, I'm not expecting his plan to be perfect. I'm not expecting any plan to be perfect. But what I'm expecting the people in the media at least to give him a fair shake, not to dismiss him before he gets started. When you had a litany of candidates, crazy candidates out there saying crazy stuff, and they gave them every right and light and benefit of being a front runner, and they're not doing him the same way. I'm not saying that the Republicans would nominate him, because you know by saying that they wouldn't nominate him, well, you could say the same thing for Barack Obama too. I mean, no way in the world that people in this country thought that they would nominate an African American, but they did. So the same thing could be true for Herman Cain. So what I'm saying, and my point is simply this, that the media is being very dismissive to the front runner, and I'm saying that his 9-9 plan may not be perfect, but it's better than every other plan that any other people that he's running against have right now. Nobody else has a plan, and Mitt Romney's 95 page plan, come on, convoluted, loopholes. And it's just like the status quo.
And all I'm saying is that prior to a week ago, I would have agreed with you that the media, some media outlets, was being dismissive of Herman Cain and his candidacy. And I'm stating over the past week or so that there's been a lot more paying attention due to the things that you mentioned, that he has won a few straw polls and he's leading in the polls. He's ahead. But in the area that he needs to be ahead in the most is fundraising. And he's not in the head in that one. So although the people are voting for him, they're not investing in him. They're not putting any money into his campaign. So, you know, what good does it do to vote and that you don't support in the one area that he really needs you to support him in so that he can continue to be out on the campaign trail and continue to make a difference? So I agree with you. You know, had we been having this conversation a week or so ago, I would agree with you that the media was a tad bit dismissive. But I don't think that's the case now, because Herman Cain has been on every major show. He was on The View. He has been on every talk show, every Sunday show, any weekend show, talking about his plan. And when he's asked certain questions, and they're even following him now on the campaign trail, because when he was asked that question about the computer and the parts was made in Malaysia and it was put together in China and sold in America as an Apple computer, who, you know, what's the taxes on that? And, you know, he's like, I don't know. So, I mean, you know, you need to give me something. Give me something like, well, you know, that's a pretty tricky question. I hadn't thought about that. I'll take that better than I don't know. I mean, you know, and it's okay to be down to earth and, you know, you can relate to everybody. And you know, and I'm kind of tired of the whole, you know, he has a compelling story. If I hear one more Republican strategist on television, radio, airwaves or whatever, telling me about Herman Cain's compelling story, that's nice, and I understand that he has a compelling story. I respect him for his life and what he's been able to accomplish. I really do. I begrudge him not at all. But if you want to be in the highest office of the land, the most respected position in the world, you better come with something more than 999. That's the bottom line. And when it's time to explain it, you need to be able to explain it to a five-year-old. You need to be able to explain it to a Rhodes Scholar, and you need to be able to explain it to the math teacher. So you need to be able to explain it to every layer of people, because that's who's voting for you. And if you can't do that in its most simple form to get me to understand it, because I said a week ago I really didn't understand it. I said it 2 weeks ago. It's really not making sense to me. Well, I should by now go out and research it and find out what it really is talking about. But I don't want to, because it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. So I'm not even that interested in it.
Fair point. I haven't read Mitt Romney's plan either. That was going to be my next thing, right? Because I think their assessment is fair up and down, right? But the problem, though, is that the standard is different for Herman Cain than it is for Mitt Romney, for Rick Perry, for Michelle Bachmann, for Ron Paul. I mean, all of these people, if they do have a plan, the same level of scrutiny is not imposed up on them. No, people don't go into that level of detail, even the president's plan. People didn't go into the nuts and bolts of the healthcare plan, but because it was President Obama and he wrapped it in this beautiful bow, everybody was like, okay. And I'm not saying that.
All I'm saying is this.
I'm saying the simple component is this: when you talk about the details, I'm saying the standard should be the same for Herman Cain that is for everybody else. If you're going to talk about the details of Herman Cain's plan, I think you should talk about the details of Romney's plan. I think you should talk about the details of Ron Paul's plan, Rick Perry's plan, Michelle Bachmann's plan, President Obama's plan. Everybody has a plan out there. We should always give the details, just like for everybody. So don't just single Herman Cain out because he has a plan that has a catchy sound.
Okay, but here's where I'm gonna respectfully disagree with you. The only two people that in the candidacy right now that actually has an economic plan, it is Herman Cain and it is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's is the same plan that they always have. So there's nothing to scrutinize. There's nothing new in there. So there's nothing to go and research and try to find, because it's the same type of stuff that they always talk about. Herman Cain's plan, the 999 plan, is something new. It is something different. It is something like, but wait a minute, you know, well, maybe that could work. So you do have people talking about it. You do have people investigating it, trying to see what's going on. But Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry did announce the energy plan the other day. That's his first plan. Now, he didn't announce a jobs plan or economic plan, but he did something on energy. But I don't think Michelle Bachmann has introduced the plan. I don't believe Nick Gingrich has introduced the plan, and I don't believe Ron Paul or any of the other ones have. So the only two right now that's running that's actually produced a document that they can say is a plan around the economy and things of that nature is Mitt Romney and Herman Cain. Now, let me go back to something you said, though, and you're talking about the president's plan. I don't know if you meant to say health care or did you mean to say his jobs bill. Did you mean to say health care?
I meant to say health care. The fact that he put a plan together that none of the Democrats read initially.
Well, I don't necessarily know if that's true, because if they hadn't read it and they were all on board, it wouldn't have taken so long for it to pass. And if you take a look at what happened in the summer of 2009 and all that came about with the Republicans and these Tea Party people, that was the birth, you know, that was the rebirth, shall I say, of the Tea Party movement, since they claim they've been around before Obama. But, you know, the whole thing around how they interpreted the certain aspects of health care as relates to the death panels, and he was going to get rid of your grandma and all that nonsense that came out of that. Oh, they were scrutinizing it. So I'm going to have to respectfully disagree with you on that.
Understood. But my point still remains. The fact that, why are we holding Herman Cain to a different standard than we hold everybody else? Why are we dismissing Herman Cain when he's a front runner? So my point is simply this. You know, he has a plan, which very few other people have a plan. But whatever the plan is, we dismiss his plan out of the gate, as opposed to when Rick Perry came out with his little bills plan about jobs and creating jobs and oil and energy, his energy plan. You know, you didn't hear that kind of level of scrutiny about his plan. That's what I'm saying.
Well, because now, here's what I'm trying to get you to understand, though, and to the listening audience, here's what I'm trying to get you to understand. If Rick Perry when he was allegedly the front runner, had come out with his energy plan then, as he did a couple of days ago, it would be under a microscope. But the reason now that it's not as talked about is because he's no longer a front runner. So nobody's really paying any attention anymore to Rick Perry because he's not doing anything. So you fast forward to where Herman Cain is today, and the fact that now people are like, well, let me go and research this because it's obviously something to this guy because he's still here and he's winning the straw polls. He's not raising a lot of money, but he's winning the straw polls. So now I do need to go and find out something about what is the 999 plan. What does he mean? What is it connected to? And so that is the difference, is that he is now in the top tier and he is now considered to be next to Mitt Romney because Mitt Romney is outperforming everybody as it relates to the debates, but he should since he's been running for forever. So he knows how to work the debate table and the debate podium because he's done it before. And it's unfortunate for Rick Perry that he hasn't figured out how to do that yet. And it's also unfortunate for Herman Cain that people continue to dismiss him. I don't dismiss him. I listen to him very closely because Herman Cain scares me. I'm scared of a Herman Cain, not only presidency, but his candidacy scares me.
Why?
So I'm listening to what, because Herman Cain has these notions about life that are not real. You can't say the reason people can't, you can't say that it's my fault I'm unemployed when my company folded because of whatever. And then to blame me for my level of discontent. You can't do that. You can't tell me that racism doesn't exist. Well, I know for a fact there's been things I haven't been able to accomplish or areas in which I haven't been able to move up in simply because of the color of my skin. So you can't tell me that. And Herman Cain is about 20-some-odd years older than me. So, you know, so it's those sorts of, when you tell people that racism doesn't exist, then you're giving some people the freedom to just do anything to you. And that's what scares me. That's what scares me, is that he makes those statements as though they're so factual, and he says it in such a way. He's a lot like Sarah Palin. You know how she was so folksy? I guess that's the term they use for her. And her verbiage wasn't all that, you know, intellectual, but it was so common that the commoner could understand her and could relate to her. That's what Herman Cain does. Now, don't misunderstand me. I respect him as a man and for what he has accomplished in his career. I really do. But he scares me with some of the things that he says.
So you mentioned earlier that you don't think he's going to get the nomination. I think he's closer to getting the nomination than any other of the candidates that's out there today. And, in fact, you know, if we had to vote tomorrow, I think he would be the nominee.
And as I stated last week, that's a debate I'd love to see between Herman Cain and President Obama. Bottom line, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. I would like to know, as a front runner, you know, when is his wife going to come out on the trail or at least be seen? Have anybody seen his wife?
No, I haven't talked too much about her.
Interesting.
You know, you mentioned that he was a man of the cloth. I think that is something that's getting people to resonate with the right wing too, as well. I mean, the fact that he's an ordained minister.
You're right, and that's what's taking over those evangelicals that's probably leaving Rick Perry at this point, and that won't commit to Mitt Romney because of Mitt Romney's stance on, you know, abortion and some of his you know, him being a Mormon and them not thinking that's true Christianity. You look at Herman Cain, and here is a Baptist preacher from the South. So, yeah, so that resonates with a lot of people in the base, for sure, without a doubt.
So why wasn't Herman Cain at the unveiling of the memorial today?
He, you know, I don't want to speak for Herman Cain, but if you know, based on things he said in the past, you know, if Herman Cain doesn't think racism exists, then he's not going to understand the need to have a monument for Dr. King, a fellow Morehouse graduate, number one. And so he's not gonna see the need for that. He's gonna probably find that to be offensive. It's just me.
So you think he's gonna be asked that question this week? I know people go to if I see him, I'm definitely gonna get him on record to have him talk about why he wasn't there. You think the mainstream media gonna do it, the top, the big four or five?
No, well, they won't ask him because he'll say his answer would be, you know, it was a scheduling conflict. You know, that's their standard answer when they don't want to go do something that might be too heavily populated one way or another. They'll say it was a scheduling conflict.
I like the way you put that, heavily populated in one way or another. On a Sunday? On a Sunday?
Yeah, on a Sunday.
Scheduling conflict. So we got the next debate coming up next week, right?
Yes, we do have a debate coming up on Tuesday, hosted by CNN, the Western debate, whatever that means, Western States debates coming out of Nevada. And I believe there's already some controversy around it. So John Huntsman has declared he is boycotting the debate.
Why is that?
A lot of it has to do with how they have treated, and you know, he's a Mormon as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that members of the party and members of that group has not come out and definitively denounced the preacher that said that Mormonism was a cult.
Okay, yeah.
So he's having some issues around that in terms of, the party, and then not just the party, but the nominees not really taking a hard stance.
Right. Well, you know, as we get ready to close in on the fourth quarter of this presidential primary season, I would call it, because they're going to move into this is the preseason, I should say, because the real games, the season starts in January because they moved up all of these different primaries. And so we'll know real soon who's going to be the nominee, whether they want to be or not, about who's going to be challenging President Obama. And it'll be interesting to see, the debates as we look at the national scene as opposed to the primary scene, because it is truly shaping up to be very comical on the Republican side.
And that's another reason why he's also boycotting, because Nevada moved up their primary as well to be earlier. And so that's another reason why he's boycotting Nevada, because he feels as though they shouldn't have moved up their primary date.
Yeah. Well, that's
so
our
we
show.
Could potentially we could potentially know the GOP's nominee by as early as like February.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I know, that'd be something.
It'll almost be just for sheer pageantry for them to go through the process of having their convention that doesn't happen till the summertime. I mean, but knowing them, they might move that up too. I mean, who knows?
Exactly.
You know, they might decide to move up their convention, which would be fine, because I think the more the president gets out there and starts to debate whoever that person is, you know, they'll soon realize that they're not going to win.
Right. Well, that's our show for today. As always, I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in. We had someone tuning in to the chat room today. Again, TWI1968 listening in. I want to send a nice shout-out to you. Thank you for joining. Of course, I always like to thank my co-host, Jima. You always give me a good, intellectual, stimulating conversation, and I really, really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Today I want to end the show with Aretha Franklin's rendition of Precious Lord. It was a remarkable rendition today, and I want to share that with the listeners out there. In case you didn't have an opportunity to hear it today, it was really moving. And I would also encourage you during this time to get out and get active, because this time is now. You know, we've been in a dire situation over the last several years. We've seen people lose their homes, lose their jobs, and lose their lives. And so now is the time for us to stand up. You know, it's talk about being for the people, by the people and other people. It's time. And so as we close, I want to play Aretha Franklin's rendition of Precious Lord. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Precious Lord, take my
You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook.